Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm Az from FPL Black Box.
Well, what an interesting round of FPL action that was, Az. Not a lot to shout about, I have to say, but we're going to do our best this morning on Off the Bench. Game week four threw up the lowest scoring round in FPL so far. And over the last few game weeks, it's been difficult to separate Salah and Haaland, hasn't it? But it was this week that those that captained the Norwegian had the big advantage. Following his back-to-back hat-tricks, a brace this week for Erling Haaland. And actually, a little bit unlucky, I thought, not to have a third hat-trick on the run with Flecken making three saves from him alone. First of all, Az, did you captain him? And how was your game week?
I did captain Haaland. He's basically single-handedly carrying me through these middling
oh, yes.
weeks. Yeah, it was all right. 59 points, small green arrow, kind of stay within the top million. I mean, I was on the wrong end last season of low-scoring game weeks when I got the 11-point game week. So,
oh, I remember it well.
Yeah, I know. I remember it well. Still have nightmares about it. When I can get through these weeks with a green arrow, I'm very thankful for that. But yeah, basically carried by Haaland captain and a certain Mateta who took the second Crystal Palace pen that we'll obviously talk about in a bit.
Oh, if we have to, yeah. I mean, I think that was the difference between me and you this week, wasn't it? The Mateta versus Eze penalty saga. We'll talk about that in just a second. I bought him in this week. I actually felt like for the next few weeks, I thought he would be a really good option. And I still think he is. No panic. We'll discuss it in a bit. But I did think he was on penalties. So that maybe lessens his appeal a little bit. 55 for me this week. So like you, I feel like I've survived it. I feel like it was a very difficult week for a lot of FPL managers. So if you haven't got a low scoring team, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think you're not alone from that perspective. Small green and a very small green up to about, if we're still talking overall ranks, if we are at this stage, then I think it's about 1.3, 1.4, something like that. Same as you, Haaland captain, so good, bank that one. And yeah, it was just one or two other players just holding up my team. The David Raya clean sheet, wasn't expecting it actually at Spurs. Did expect Spurs to get a goal there in that game, but that's the benefit of having Raya and a non-playing second goalkeeper, is that your hand is forced every week. You're going to play him and he brings home the 9-pointer. So I was pretty happy with that. So difficult week, but survived.
Yeah, I mean, Raya was a killer for me. I went with Henderson at the start of the season, who has not performed. In fact, Raya has got more points in that game against Spurs than Henderson has all season. So that sums up that. That sums up that decision. We'll talk about Arsenal defence in a bit, but they just look incredible. And, you know, they haven't had the easiest fixtures to start the season, but, you know, it's three and four clean sheets. It's been brilliant.
Why don't we start there then? I mean, Arsenal versus Spurs, the North London derby, the big game from the weekend. Arsenal coming into it with, you know, no Rice, no Ødegaard, and a few of us kind of looking at that going, well, how are they going to cope? This is a big test for Arsenal going away to Spurs in the North London derby without the captain, without a couple of really big players. But as you rightly said, they had a game plan, executed it really well, and the defence continues to be elite, doesn't it? I mean, it's Manchester City up next, so I don't think any of us are going to rush to add to any Arsenal defensive players with Haaland up next in game week five. But from game week six, the fixtures take a really good turn for Arsenal with Leicester, Southampton and Bournemouth in 6, 7 and 8. So last season, a lot of FPL managers went for the double up in defence. Is that something, well, who have you got and are you considering the double up now? Because they have again proved themselves to be elite, haven't they?
Well, I've got none at the moment. Arsenal players at all. I really kind of looked at the fixtures and thought, I know Arsenal this elite kind of defence, but I thought with Villa, with Brighton, Spurs, you know, they probably wouldn't be, they might concede a couple of goals there. They conceded one goal all season. So it's been far from ideal for my own team. I think the double up is on though, isn't it? I mean, obviously, like you say, not from this week, but from game week six, Leicester at home, Southampton at home, those two games, I'm expecting a clean sheet in both of those. I mean, Gabriel and Raya are the sixth highest scoring players in the game combined.
Mad, isn't it?
So, you know, we focus on attack and we're worrying about Watkins versus Palmer versus Saka versus Son versus Foden, all these players. And actually, it's just the 5.5 million defenders for Arsenal who are just racking up the points week after week. So, got to get one in. They weathered the storm, didn't they, from Spurs in the first 20 minutes. A very attacking lineup.
Yes.
But once they got through that, in fact, in the last sort of, after they scored, it never really looked like they were going to concede, did it?
No, that set piece threat is, we saw it all last season and we shouldn't ignore it. Again, they've continued to do it. And actually, when I was watching that game, when Arsenal won that corner, you could see that little corner of the Arsenal fans were, well, they were celebrating the corner as if they're rubbing their hands. They say, oh, here we go. This is, you know, they know, they're so confident, the fans and the players, of getting something from set pieces. And with Gabriel in your team, why not? I mean, since he joined the club, he scored the most set piece goals. That's the first thing to say, which is, yep. I guess that's definitely something that you wouldn't be necessarily surprised about. But that is also the most of any defender in the whole of the Premier League during that time. So yep. He is a massive threat. And when you've got somebody like Saka banging them in, who, by the way, now has scored or assisted in every match he's played now for Arsenal this season. So he continues to tick over really nicely, Saka. The two of them, I think if you were going to go into Arsenal for game week 6, which it sounds like you might be, as Saka and Gabriel look like the two to go for, or could you be tempted by the goalkeeper? Where would you go?
It's a good question. I mean, Saka's, I know he's picked up a little bit of an injury, but this has happened before.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on.
Something to keep an eye on, but he tends to get over these quite quickly, doesn't he? And play any minute that he's available for. So one to monitor, but I think he'll probably be back in the lineup as soon as he's, I mean, especially with City next as well. I'll just give him a bionic leg and stick him back on the pitch.
Wheel him out.
Wheel him out. Yeah, exactly. In terms of the defence, though, I think it's really interesting because what I like about Raya is, A, the goalkeeper position's really hard to get right. Like, I'm messing around with 4.5 million goalkeepers. The 5 million goalkeepers, Pope and Martinez, aren't really delivering. You could go to Alisson maybe, but then you're obviously blocking yourself out of, you know, Trent, Salah, Jota, Diaz, you know, all those players that are really good. And Raya just feels like you get him in, like you've got, and that's it. That position is sorted for you now to the end of the season. And he's picking up bonus. Whenever there's a clean sheet, which is happening regularly, obviously, with Arsenal, he's picking up bonus. Another 2 bonus against Spurs. He got 3 bonus in the 2-0 win against Aston Villa and all 3 bonus in the win against Wolves as well. So even though Gabriel's got the goal threat, it seems that it's Raya who's picking up the bonus every time they keep a clean sheet. So it's, I don't know. I think it's really tight between them. You do get the extra goal threat with Gabriel, but I think I'm leaning towards Raya as the better option.
Yeah, and I think because he's that little bit cheaper as well. It's just his style, isn't it? Mm. If he picks up a couple of save points, which he does, because he's a very good shot stopper, but then it's also the way that he plays with his feet. We know that Arteta likes that style with his goalkeepers. That's why he got Raya in the first place. That's why Ramsdale moved on, right? It's the fact that he can rack up that pass completion rate, because that's what the underlying BPS system in FPL loves, right? It loves saves. Yep. It loves pass completion rates from goalkeepers. So yes, he is going to rack up, like you say, whenever there's a clean sheet. And of course, didn't get the 3 bonus points this week. Obviously, it's Gabriel. Go on a clean sheet, obviously. But if that goal is scored by somebody else from the Arsenal side, there's a pretty good chance that Raya gets the clean sheet and potentially 3 bonus points as well, and even more points. So I bought him in a couple of weeks ago, exactly with that intent, as which was, I don't want to have to, it's almost like something I haven't got to think about every week. You just play him. And okay, if Arsenal concede, which isn't happening very often, but if they do, you just accept it. And if they don't, it's a 9 or 10 pointer, so I do like it. You mentioned there, Az, about Spurs. Let's just discuss them for a second. Very good for the first 20. I thought they came out with all guns blazing, full of intent for the first 20 minutes. But after that, it sort of, I don't know, Arsenal just sort of stamped their authority on the game a little bit. And I want to talk in particular about Heung-Min Son, because there will be some FPL managers out there that have got him, no doubt. He's reasonably highly owned and he's expensive. And in a week where, you know, we're going to be looking ahead to 6 and Saka, and maybe you'll want to get onto Haaland if you haven't got him already, and Salah looks like a decent captaincy for 5, etc. Son's looking like a difficult hold, isn't he?
Well, he is at his price as well. And I said this kind of at the start of the season, and then obviously he went in game week 2 and got 16 points against Everton, which makes me look a bit stupid. But when he's competing against Palmer, Saka, you know, Foden's due to come back, De Bruyne is obviously starting a lot of games for Man City now, I'm unsure really where to place him in the rankings. And if we're thinking about wildcards coming up and looking at Haaland, looking at Saka because of those fixtures, you know, still going for Trent, Salah's still obviously, I know, a blank, but still a great option for us. I just really don't know where Son is going to feature in our seasons. And the big thing for me was when I watched that game yesterday, okay, he missed a good chance, I think. Couldn't really get the ball out from under his feet. But Dominic Solanke looked great in that game. You know,
looked good.
Industrious player, making good runs, getting chances, got like a looping, created a chance out of nothing for that kind of looping header that I think had beaten Raya. And he's cheaper than Son at nearly, you know, 2.5 million less. So why would we be going for Son when we could have Solanke, especially if Solanke takes penalties off him as well? I just don't see myself going there this season.
Yeah, particularly when our midfields are full of options and talent, aren't we? I don't think it's difficult to fill five midfield slots in FPL this season. Whereas that forward line, it's getting a little bit more congested in our forward lines. You know, apart from João Pedro missing out this week, he's putting his hand up, isn't he, in recent weeks? And obviously, Ollie Watkins will do him next, I think, putting his hand up. And obviously, Haaland, of course, right? But Solanke at 7.5. Yeah, I think I give him the benefit of the doubt in this game, right? He's up against the elite defence in the Premier League, no doubt about it. And he's just coming back from a little bit of a knock, a bit of an injury. So, yeah, industrial. I like that word used. He was industrious, wasn't he? He really put in a shift. And I think for 7.5, I think you keep him on radar. But if you are going to invest in that Spurs attack, then yeah, it's got to be him. I can't see that why you'd spend, 2.5, 3 million more for Son right now. I just don't see it.
You keep him this week, don't you? Like, he's got Brentford at home this week. I think you keep him for that, but...
For Brentford?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, obviously Saka's got Man City. Palmer's... Are you going to want to get Palmer, with the other options? I think I would hold him this week, but then look to move in six.
Yeah, okay. Well, somebody else that's putting his hand up in that forward line is Ollie Watkins. So he was given four big chances this weekend and a non-penalty XGI of 1.34. And we've seen that in recent weeks, haven't we? Despite a couple of misses early on in game weeks one and two, he's now starting to find his scoring boots. And even he himself came out after the game and said, look, I'm not quite 100% yet, but I'm kind of getting there, finding my match fitness, finding my shooting boots. And did very well against Everton, didn't he? I mean, they've got the Champions League coming up, Everton, which will be a bit of a concern, I guess, particularly when they have another striker this season in John Duran, who can bang him in from that distance. I mean, what a strike that was. I thought that was going to be goal of the weekend, and then Harvey Barnes did Harvey Barnes things on Sunday. So we'll maybe talk about that strike later on. Great to see the, outside of the box humdinger coming back this weekend. There was a few, wasn't there? Shout out to Fabian Scher as well. But Ollie Watkins then, what do you think? A rotation risk with John Duran around the Champions League or a decent captaincy option for five? Because the fixtures for Villa continue to look good, don't they?
Well, it's really interesting what they do with Watkins and Duran, because Rodgers is there as well, obviously playing 90 minutes at all times. I wonder if it might be Ramsey that's sacrificed to bring in Duran if they are going to start him. But it's almost like he's so effective coming off the bench at the moment. It's almost like, why would you change that? Who was it? Was it Lafondra? Do you remember him at Reading when he was like coming off the bench and scoring
every
week?
There won't be many people listening to this remember Adam Lafondra. That's a nice, I like that. That's a nice reference.
There you go. Well, if you remember Adam Lafondra, he was a player who basically only scored off the bench, and he scored so many, they stuck him in the starting 11. And in my memory, he basically never scored again when he was playing. So when you've got such a weapon like that, it's hard to kind of change it around. I think Duran probably comes into the Champions League first 11. I mean, and there might be a bit of a tweak in that, but they are picking up wins. I know obviously they lost against Arsenal, but I think they were a bit unlucky in that because Watkins had a couple of good chances. Mm. And it's wins against West Ham, Leicester, and Everton playing the way they are. I don't think Watkins is a risk. I mean, it's 83 minutes he played in the last game. It was 360 minutes. That's what put me off buying him. I don't know if it's the same for you, but If he'd been playing 90 going into Everton, I almost certainly would have owned him for this week. But I looked at those 60 minutes and thought, I just don't like him getting subbed off early.
Yeah, and it was the form, wasn't it? Like you say, those couple of misses against Arsenal, and he didn't quite look at it. And I was just kind of, and I know the art of FPL really is to get ahead of these things, but I just was waiting for him to put in the sort of performance that he put in this weekend, and I was hoping it was coming sooner rather than later, because obviously the fixtures for the next five in particular look great, with Wolves at home up next, and Wolves under O'Neill, under a bit of pressure, one win in their last 15-16 Premier League games. They're not exactly firing on all cylinders, so a nice fixture for Ollie Watkins coming up in five. And then going forward, I was just kind of waiting for him to show us that bit of form, and I think we've seen it against Everton. What did you make of the Everton performance though? Because like two game weeks in a row, obviously, where they've gone 2-0 up and lose 3-2. So on the face of it, you'd go, well, it's mentality issues, Dyche isn't getting it right, etc. But I had this conversation with Sam last night on our live stream, and she was like, yeah, Everton really all over the place, wouldn't invest. And I said, well, there's signs there though, isn't there? There's signs there. They are going 2-0 up. They are playing quite well. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, only 2.3% owned, with good fixtures coming up, Everton. I'm not for a minute suggesting you go out and get, Pickford or Michael Keane or anybody in their defence, but offensively, as they don't look too bad. And Dwight McNeil created 17 chances this season, more than any other player. Dominic Calvert-Lewin scoring goals. am I barking up the wrong tree here, or are Everton investable ahead of what I think is a reasonable run of fixtures?
Well, when I saw that stat about Dwight McNeil, 17 chances this season, more than any other player, I thought, whoa, that is.
It's gone under the radar, right?
It has, yeah. And he's been a funny FPL asset. I mean, he's obviously a great player. He has been under Dyche, but FPL wise, he goes on these runs of blank, 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 and then just pops up with like a world class performance. Where he gets like 15 points. Yeah, I mean, you know, when Calvert-Lewin is showing the form that he's in at the moment, and he's got Dwight McNeil creating chances for him, I do always think he's a good asset. I want to see a fully fit Dominic Calvert-Lewin. It's not something that we've seen for a while. He's only 2% owned in the game now. The fixtures are pretty good for Everton. I guess my question, to flip it back to you, is how important is that kind of team form and that team morale when you're considering a player like Calvert-Lewin? Because actually the stats for Calvert-Lewin are decent, but Everton, you know, the confidence is going to start waning, isn't it? And if question marks are raised around Dyche, is that going to affect the team to the point where you wouldn't consider Calvert-Lewin?
Well, I think that's the thing that's sticking in my mind, is that, and he's cheap enough, Calvert-Lewin, right? He's, I think, 5.8, 5.9, something like that. So he's really good price in FPL. And he's going to be taking the penalties, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, good asset on the face of it. But if you're a forward in that Everton side and you keep looking back defensively and what keeps happening to them, it's demoralising, isn't it? It's demoralising. You rightly say that's going to have an effect on the team. It's going to put the players under pressure, put the manager under pressure. I mean, Sean Dyche has been here, done it, got the T-shirt, right? So he'll have, you know, he eats pressure for breakfast. So I don't think it's necessarily going to show on him.
He eats pressure for breakfast. I like that.
Yes, you can take that. You can have that one. So I don't think we're going to see any sort of, you know, post-match Dyche breakdowns or anything like that. But for the players, yeah. You know, the likes of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he's going to be looking at that and going, well, it doesn't matter how many I score, we still seem to be leaking at the back. So I do agree with you. That is there's a general team malaise at Everton, which might have an impact on Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So I don't think I'm going to be immediately investing, but with Leicester away up next and then Palace and Newcastle at home, Ipswich away in 8, Fulham at home in 9.
It's an unbelievable run of
fixtures
for Everton.
It's a great run, isn't it? It's a great run.
Yeah. I mean, like you say, they have been going 2 up. They just need to stop conceding goals. And you know, I think, you know, Branthwaite is surely back soon, and that is, you know, it's like making a new 60-70 million pound signing to shore up your defense, isn't it? And I think that's going to have a big impact, and it's coming at the right time. But if they lose against Leicester, I think there are going to be some question marks asked about Dyche, and that might affect the rest of the team. But genuinely, I quite like the Calvert-Lewin punt going forward. I think you can do a lot worse for 5.9.
Yeah, I don't mind it. There's suddenly a few players in that bracket, isn't there? Him, you've got João Pedro, you've got, who else is in there? Jamie Vardy, maybe even potentially, who's got another goal, who we all kind of wrote off coming into the season. You know, he can't do it. He's not got the legs. He's past his best. But here he is, just showing us all up and proving us all wrong. Maybe let's do that game then. Jamie Vardy at Leicester versus Crystal Palace at Selhurst at the weekend. We got to talk about Mateta and Eze in a minute. But just a shout out for Vardy then. Is he an option? Is it mad to be considering Jamie Vardy?
Yes, I think it probably is.
Okay, fair play.
I'd rather have Pedro or Calvert-Lewin.
I think.
I mean, Leicester are ranked 19th for expected goals over the season. They keep kind of finding a way to score, and we know Vardy's got that quality. I mean, how he's still managing to score goals in the Premier League,
I love it. I think it's brilliant.
Is incredible. And you know, he's played more minutes than Watkins, for example. That's 2 back to back 90 minutes for Vardy.
Everton at home up next.
I know. And he's got that kind of legendary status. But I don't know. I just think Leicester, generally, I still don't really trust the attack too much. It is a good game against Everton next. Then it's Arsenal away. Then it's all right again. Then when it's Bournemouth and Southampton, it depends what you want from him. I just think Pedro's the same price playing for a more expansive, more attacking Brighton team. I'd go there, but I don't hate it. I changed my mind. I said at the start it's mad to be considering. I think mad might be a bit of a stretch, but I do think there's better options.
Nice. Yeah, nice. And I do want to give a shout out to Wilfred Ndidi as well. Only 5 million FPL, now 3 assists in 2 matches. More advanced than we used to see in Wilfred Ndidi. He seems to be sort of up there and in those sorts of areas that we wouldn't expect. So again, not going to put him inside the kind of Jamie Vardy bracket as investable. Have I just put Jamie Vardy in the investable bracket? I think I have. I'm not going to put him up there.
This is what's happened. Yeah,
we've gone from mad to maybe it's investable. So with the two of them, I'm not going to go in for either of them. But just want to keep an eye on Wilfred Ndidi. Seems to be popping up in areas that we're not used to. Yeah, 5 mil. So he could be, if you're wildcarding maybe this week or next, could be a decent enabler. Let's get this out of the way. Let's get the Mateta and Eze thing out of the way, because you've got Mateta, I've got Eze, and I bought Eze in this week and thinking, okay, well, he's not got any points this week, but here we go. 93rd minute penalty or whatever it was, not a last minute penalty. Great. You know, that's why I bought him in, because as soon as I saw the Palace penalty flash up, I'm counting the points already as, right? I'm already thinking, how many points is Eze going to get me? I think he got the ball. I think he had it in his hands and then kind of gave it to Mateta. Mm. So where are a few post-match comments from Glasner as well about this, which maybe we'll discuss. But what is your take on it? Is Mateta now the penalty taker? Do Eze owners need to be worried about this?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Glasner has said, basically, we have two penalty takers and they can kind of decide amongst themselves. I hate that. The thought of that makes me feel a bit weird. I like the idea that you've got one penalty taker, they get the ball, you give it to them, sure, and they do it.
And it's Eze, right? That's why we all bought
him. Yeah. I mean, Eze hasn't exactly scored a lot of penalties.
That's true.
In his career. He scored one penalty in 2023, and the same before. So he's only actually scored two penalties in the league. I mean, he's obviously capable of scoring them, don't get me wrong, but Mateta is just that player, isn't he, at the moment under Glasner? He's carried on really from where he left off towards the end of last season. You know, he's gone off and played at the Olympics. He scored all those goals in the cup for them the other game. And the worry was with Nketiah coming in, what that would really mean for him. But actually, I think the link up between the three of them looked really, really impressive. Mm. And it's interesting with Mateta in my own team, because I was thinking of selling him this week because I thought,
oh, okay. All right.
But I thought, oh, and Nketiah's coming in. You know, it's three blanks in a row in the league. You know, Eze's the one to get because he's on the penalties. And now Mateta's gone from, you know, probably my top sell to actually, I think, being quite a good asset. Funny how FPL works.
Yeah. And I think you're right about Nketiah. He's come in and, all right, early days, but the signs are good, right? The signs are good. He's only 5.9 in FPL. So when we were having the Vardy conversation, you know, he's up there and in the DCL conversation that we were having before. Five shots in the first half alone. So he came out like a house on fire in that game against Leicester. Six shots in total. So we kind of quietened down a little bit in the second half. But five shots in the first half, 15 penalty area touches and six attempts on goal. So no one had more this game week than six attempts on goal. Both Watkins, all of Watkins, Haaland and Nketiah all had six. So he's up there in fairly elite company. I mean, like I say, early days, but you're right. The signs for Palace fans were very positive that Glasner can get a tune out of the three of them working together.
Yeah, it's another 6 million-ish option. You know, we talked about Vardy, we talked about Calvert-Lewin, talked about Pedro. I think Nketiah's there too, if you're looking to save a bit of money to move for some of the other premium assets. I mean, what do you think about Eze though? I mean, you bought Eze in this week. Are you more concerned about him now? Do you think his stock has fallen a bit, or are you still happy to hold?
Well, I think it does give you pause for thought, doesn't it, as an Eze owner? I mean, it doesn't make him a bad asset, right? Even at 7 million, he's still a really good option. And I think, you know, he's been having shots on goal and he scored that, you know, inverted commas, you know, goal, didn't he, the other week from the free kick, which, you know, the referee ruled out, but should have been a worldie. So he's full of confidence and he's getting in all the right areas and doing all the right things that we'd expect of an FPL asset. It was almost like the penalties were the icing on the cake for me. I just thought, well, with those fixtures, a couple of home games, one at Leicester, one at Man United coming up next in five, and then Everton away in six. I was targeting those three really and thinking, yep, okay, well, Eze's the one. I'm going to need to see something now. I think going into those three, if he was, you know, 100% on penalties and I come out of those three and maybe he's only got one goal out of the three games, you go, okay, well, he's still on pens and he's still quite cheap. I think now, no panic, but I'm kind of looking at him going, well, I do need to see something from you, Eze, over the next kind of two with Manu and Everton, because then it's Liverpool in seven and then away at Forest, who have proved themselves to be, and we'll go there next, I think, proved themselves to be, you know, a tough nut to crack at Anfield this weekend. So suddenly from, you know, seven, it doesn't look quite so good. So I do need to see something now from Eze. So no panic, but yes, do need to see something.
0.8 XGI for Eze this week.
I know. Right. So he's still posting the underlying numbers, isn't he? He's still there and thereabouts on the underlying stats. It's just, you know, would have been nice to see him tuck that penalty away. But like you say, not, you know, one penalty in the last season, one penalty again in the season before. So not exactly prolific from the spot, let's say. Did give a quick shout out there to Nottingham Forest. Let's go there next then. And let's do this quickly because I want to rip the Band-Aid off and get past this game as quickly as
let's spend
possible.
The next 20 minutes on this one. It's good to get your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? At Liverpool Forest, I was not, you know, obviously was expecting the win. Liverpool at home started the season very, very well indeed. Before I launch into, you know, what I've made of the Liverpool performance, the first thing I have to say is that I thought Forest were excellent. Absolutely excellent. I thought they really put in a shift. I thought they were, you know, I saw a couple of highlights of the match and they were throwing bodies in front of the ball when Liverpool got into the final third, really disrupting the play. I'll talk in a minute about the changes that Arne Slot made and when he made them. But before I do that, what were your thoughts on Forest in particular? Because I thought it looked very, very good.
Very impressed. And especially when I saw the lineup and I saw Noah Langer or Hudson-Odoi, it almost looks like the kind of... not throwing the game away, but there's a game plan, but it looks like they're just going to go on the defensive in that match. And, you know, effectively that is what they did. They weathered the storm for as long as they could, chucked them on near the end, and then they combined to get the goal, you know, rightfully so. I think I thought they played really well. And, you know, we talk about all these attacking performances that we see from Man City's and Arsenal's and even Liverpool with the high press. But when you watch a match like that, you've got a lot of respect for the way Nottingham Forest carried out the game plan and saw it through. So, yeah, really impressed with them. I thought moving Aina to right back was really interesting as well, bringing Moreno into left back. I think that gives us two really good options in the Forest defence now. I think you can go for either of those. They look really attacking. You know, when the fixtures get a bit better, I think I'll almost certainly be picking up one of those. I mean, Aina's down to 4.4 million.
Yeah,
now.
Cheap, isn't he?
Yeah, really cheap. So, yeah, I think if you've got Neco Williams, you'll obviously be looking to sell and probably move to one of those two. Sells still looks a bit ropey, though. I mean, obviously, saw the fumble from the Diaz.
Could have done with that going in, couldn't we? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a bit dodgy. So he's a bit of a concern. But, you know, made five saves in that match and came away with max bonus too. So he could be an option, but I think he's potentially the problem area for them going forward. Mm.
Yeah, very impressed with Forrest. And I think from a Liverpool perspective then, yeah, the changes that Arne Slot made, and we've seen this in previous weeks, right? He's giving, you know, Jota an hour, maybe 65 minutes, Diaz about the same sort of time. It's only really Mo Salah that's staying on for the 90. And that's maybe because Chiesa's not kind of fully up to speed yet, let's see. Or maybe it's just because he's Mo Salah, right? But this kind of early substitutions with Trent as well in previous weeks, we've seen that, although he did move Trent into... I was going to say midfield, but more of like a 10, I think, in this game. Mm. But it was those changes that really changed the momentum of the game. And I think Nuno Espirito Santo should be given a lot of credit for chucking on the likes of Hudson-Odoi and Alanga to exploit the changes that he made. So, you know, Slot takes off McAllister, so we're a little bit weaker in the middle on the left-hand side, and he moves Trent and puts Bradley on there. So Nuno Espirito Santo, Slot kind of moved to a 3, didn't he, at the back? And Espirito Santo goes, okay, well, why don't I chuck on Hudson-Odoi and I chuck on Alanga speed in those sorts of areas. I'll get at Conor Bradley if I can and I'll whip the ball across to him and try and expose Liverpool's back three. And that's exactly what he did. And he did it brilliantly well. And I think from Slot's perspective, he's got to look at that and kind of learn, you know, no panic, I don't think, from us Liverpool fans, particularly as we have Bournemouth coming up next. And I expect Bournemouth to come to Anfield with a slightly different game plan. I did notice that Bournemouth are very much not a low block side. They're second in the table so far for pressures in the opposition half this season. So they like to press high. They like to get in the face of the opponent, unlike what Forest did in this game, which was to kind of sit off and then try and hit on the counter-attack late into the game. So with a lot of FPL managers going for Salah in recent weeks, obviously, and with Diaz and Jota definitely on radar, if not in a lot of FPL managers' teams, we've got to see how Liverpool do against Milan on Tuesday. Big game coming up in the Champions League. I'm not going to panic too much on Liverpool. That, I think, is a reasonable game with a high-pressing Bournemouth side coming to Anfield next up. I think the game will look and feel different to the Forest game. But I don't know. You tell me, what do you think about these early subs? Because that's what FPL managers will be looking at. They'll be looking at Jota, looking at Diaz and going, well, I can't just be dealing with 60 minutes. I need more from these players.
Well, Lee, an early sub is one thing, right? We all are going to have players in our team who make an early sub. As a Jota owner... ball goes
I know
up.
What you're going to say.
Diaz and Jota stop walking off the pitch. Diaz takes a nice little leisurely stroll. Jota decides he's going to be a bit quicker. What does that mean for my FPL team? It means he loses out on 2 points because he's too eager to get off the
field. Needs to walk a bit slower, Jota.
I mean, have you ever seen that before? I mean, we've seen players, you know, coming off of 59 minutes, but, you know, two pretty popular assets in Diaz and Jota, and one gets 60 because he walks a bit slower off the pitch.
It's crazy.
I mean, when I lose a mini league by you know, 2 points, I'm going to look back at this, look back at this moment. Yeah, I mean, it is a worry, and, you know, you've touched on it, you know, the subs bringing on Darwin and Gakpo. I'd be a bit more worried if they'd came on and suddenly, you know, Darwin got a goal and Gakpo was putting pressure. I mean, I don't know about you. I think the front three stays the same for the next game. I'm not too worried about Darwin or Gakpo coming in to that side.
No.
But I think Jota's got to start delivering. You know, he's 7.5 million, and I'm genuinely happy to have that price point into the Liverpool attack. But this is a couple of blanks now. There's a few concerns about him dropping a bit deeper. He missed a decentish chance, I thought, in that game. As well, kind of near the start. So yeah, I want to see a bit more from him. But yeah, well, you might completely disagree, but I think it's the same front three again against Bournemouth, right?
I think that, yes. I mean, we've got to keep an eye on Tuesday and what happens in the Champions League. But what the key swinger for me in terms of why I think that is that when these players are coming on for Liverpool, we're just not seeing enough, right? We're not seeing enough. And okay, Gakpo, I think maybe gets a bit of a pass, maybe. But, you know, last season when Nunes come on, he's a handful, wasn't he? He would hassle defenders. He'd be a real pain to play against. I remember him coming on at St. James's Park, banging a couple of goals against Newcastle. And he was just a handful. Whereas this season he's come on so far and he's just not doing anything, in my opinion, that would suggest I want to be in this team, never mind that I should be in this team. And actually, the Nottingham Forest goal, and I'm not singling him out here because it was, you know, Liverpool had plenty of chances to stop the counter-attack. But the goal comes from the fact that he doesn't hold the ball up, he loses possession too easily, and Forest has hit us on the break in the way that Espirito Santo completely, you know, it's completely intentional with the substitutions that he made. So, you know, I'm not saying Jota would have held it up better, you know, the same scenario could have happened, but I don't know, maybe as a sort of Liverpool fan, I'm expecting more from Nunes. I'm expecting more when he comes on to want to get in this team, and I'm just not seeing it. So from that perspective, yes, I agree with you. I want to see Jota getting more minutes. I don't like him coming off on 59 and 56 seconds or whatever it was he come off on. Very frustrating. But I don't, at the minute, I don't see that his position is, and this might come back to haunt me, right? Because Gakpo can play there.
Oh yeah, we've both said it now. So it's definitely gonna
Nunes
come back.
Can play there. Yeah, it's gonna come back to bite us, this, isn't it? But I just don't see that Jota doesn't get the start. I really don't. I really don't. So Liverpool's 100% record gone, but Man City's still intact. So Man City versus Brentford, they're just at it, aren't they? They're just properly at it, Manchester City, and in particular Erling Haaland. How much do we dedicate to this podcast on Erling Haaland? Or do we just say, well, here's a question for you then. You and I have both got him. We've both captained him this week.
Yep.
We'll talk about captaincy for next week, a bit later on in the pod maybe. But if you don't have him, right, because there's still plenty of FPL managers out there that have gone, you know, Saka, Palmer, Salah, haven't got Haaland. Do you bring him in this week against an elite Arsenal defence, or do you wait it out for, you know, Newcastle next week, or certainly Fulham at home in seven? Do you sort of bust your team up to, or break your team up to get him in this week as, and just admit that you've made a bit of a mistake there not having him, or can you hold off for a couple of weeks?
It is a great question. I mean, you talked about, I mean, it is obviously they've won every match, Man City, but they were really under it against Brentford initially. I think Pep said it was the best performance he'd seen against them ever, didn't he, in the first 20 minutes?
Could have been two or three, couldn't it? First 20 minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Rissa scored and Mbeumo had a good chance that was blocked by Rico Lewis. But then, like you say, once it starts to turn a little bit and City start growing into the game, and it's obvious, it's an obvious thing to say, but when you look at the team and how that team is set up to get Erling Haaland goals, and the form he's in,
it's just inevitable, isn't he?
I've never seen a player where you're just so certain. I was so certain he was going to get a goal against Brentford, at least one. You know, I know obviously there was the really sad news about his friend that passed away, and there was some rumours about whether he'd start. I just knew he'd start and I knew he'd score. There was no doubt in my mind. And when you've got a player like that, you'd pay 15 million for them. You've hit the nail on the head though, is do you get him this week? Like, if you're wildcarding this week,
it's hard, isn't it?
Do you have to have him this week against Arsenal? I still think you do, because I look at other players this week and I look around other squads, and, you know, we've talked about Watkins, and we're even he's just hit two goals against Everton, plays Wolves next, who are conceding goals for fun. And even him, I'm not totally sold on because of Champions League and because of Duran and other players.
Yeah.
Like, who is there? Like, who is there that is that consistent that you can trust every week? And if you haven't got Salah this week, I'd be going Haaland, captain, which says a lot, even though it's Arsenal. So I'm just going to say, I think you've got to have him. I think you've got to have him. And if you've come 4 weeks without him, I think you need to get him, even if it's this week, because it's just getting silly now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's what was telling for me is that, you know, back-to-back hat-tricks and then a brace. And he's mad about that. He's not happy with it, right? You see him at the end of the game, right? He's fuming at Kevin De Bruyne for not playing him in for the hat-trick at the end there. And what does that tell me? That tells me that despite getting, 8 goals in the last 3 games, and now 9 overall for the season, I think the next best, I think there's a bunch of players on 3 or 4, I think, you know, maybe Salah and a few others, right? So he's way ahead in golden boot stakes already, Haaland. And he's not happy with himself. He's not happy with the team. He wants more. And I just think, I agree with you. I would not be going any further with FPL without bringing him in. And if you need to wildcard to bring him in, I think that's absolutely okay. Could easily have been 3 again. Could easily have been 3 back-to-back hat-tricks. And if we're talking about a player that's got 3 back-to-back hat-tricks, you just got to have him in FPL. I think you just got to have him.
I guess the only thing is, if you have got Salah, are you captaining Haaland this week?
Well,
The answer's probably no, right? So you could maybe make the case for holding off one more week and bringing him in game week 6. But if you are thinking about wildcard in game week 6, and you haven't got Haaland, just ask yourself, is your team going to be that much different next week? Because, I mean, the biggest thing, I guess, is Arsenal. Maybe you don't want to be carrying 2 or 3 Arsenal players away at City this week. But if you can build it in a way where you could, you know, you can play Saka, can't you? Or, you know, you can play one of them and maybe have the other one on the bench and bring them in for 6. But yeah, I would still be very, very tempted, I think, to just get Haaland in my team and, you know, plan from there.
I think you're right. And a word for Brentford then, because their fixtures in particular from game week 6, it's West Ham at home, Wolves at home, Ipswich at home, 3 of the following 4 from 6 to 9. And even an away trip to Spurs doesn't look too bad given the sort of slight malaise that's going on at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium right now. So I don't mind bringing in, well, anybody from Brentford, quite frankly. Yeah. 22 saves from Flecken this season, more than any other goalkeeper. So he's averaging 6 saves a game. You've got Mbeumo, who, like you say, was denied a big opportunity by Rico Lewis early on in that City game. The only question mark I would have now is obviously Johan Visser. I think we're yet to see sort of concrete confirmation, but it looks to be a few weeks out for him, potentially. Problem that for Brentford? Does that put you off them at all? Do they change their shape and change the way that they attack because Johan Visser might be out for the next few weeks? What do you think about investing in Brentford? Maybe ahead of Spurs, but certainly from 6 onwards, right?
Yeah, I think that is a blow if he's out, because I think that partnership with Mbeumo is working really well.
Looking great, wasn't it?
Yeah, and obviously Thiago's not around, so they're going to need to kind of restructure things. Maybe Carvalho comes in, and Mbeumo is kind of the lone striker up top, but that's a bit of an untested partnership up there. I still think, though, it's Mbeumo who you're probably going to want to invest in anyway, given that he's on penalties, given the start of the season he's had, given that we've seen him play, you know, in this kind of role before, and he's done really well for us. So I think he's the one you still go for. It does put me off him a bit if Visser is out longer term, though. So it's definitely one to monitor, but hopefully he's back sort of relatively soon. I still think I'd be going Mbeumo from 6, though. Like you say, West Ham, Wolves, Man United, Ipswich. It's a great run. At the back, though, the biggest news for me was Van de Berg stepping in.
Yes,
4 million.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Might be able to get rid of Barco.
You know, a player that we know. Well, I wasn't going to mention Barco. We mentioned him last time you and I were on here together, and it did go down too well. But yeah, another 4.0 that should definitely be on the radar. A player that we know quite well at Anfield, right? Given that they bought him from us. Young, needs game time, needs experience, but, you know, working under Thomas Frank, not many better managers for him to learn his trade under. So yeah, 4.0, eyes on him. If you are, I don't know if I'd be making a sort of, you know, move for him and using a precious transfer, but if you're wildcarding this week or next, he's probably your 4.0, no?
Well, he's a steal, isn't he? And, you know, straight in the team against Man City away. I mean, that if that doesn't show that he's been trusted with the starting, with you know, and he did all right. So I can't see any way in which he doesn't play, unless they change. You know, they were three at the back, weren't they? So maybe they change and change that up. But they've paid a lot of money for him. I think he's just a starter in that side. Him and Collins. I like Collins as well. He's a little bit more. I would still be going to Vandenberg, I think, and risking that, but he's an option. And Flecken as well in goal, you know, with the fixtures they've got, he's made the most saves of all goalkeepers in the league. He's the alternative to Raya. You know, if you go Flecken and Gabriel, yes, for example, that's maybe your alternative.
All right, Az, let's blaze through the rest of these games because we're rapidly running out of time. Let's go to Bournemouth versus Chelsea then. Not getting any easier to know which Chelsea asset we should buy in FPL, if any. Doesn't look as if it's Cole Palmer on the basis of what we saw at the weekend. Failed to register a single shot or penalty box touch. Only an expected assist, an XA of 0.03 in that game. That is not enough for a £10.6 million FPL asset, isn't it?
Well, if it's not Palmer, who is it? Because Madueke's scored a hat-trick and has now blanked in two successive matches. Right. Sancho didn't start but came on and looked excellent. And, you know, that kind of maybe eliminates Neto as an option, but are we ready to trust Sancho yet? You've got João Felix, you know, lurking around. You've got Nkunku came off the bench and scored, but surely no one's going to want to get burnt by that. Jackson missed a load of chances. They're just, no. I think this is a short segment for me on Chelsea. It was a good win, you know, even game. Either team could have won it. Chelsea won it. I'm not going anywhere near them.
Yeah, difficult one, isn't it? It wasn't a particularly inspiring performance from Chelsea. And we did get a little bit from the Leicester fans in the summer, didn't we, about Maresca ball and what it might look like. And is it that exciting a setup? And maybe we're just starting to see a little bit of that, you know, efficient if, you know, not very exciting football from Chelsea. I don't know. It's difficult to know where to go to. And as someone that's got Cole Palmer currently in my team.
Oh, have you? I was going to ask. Yeah, what you can do with him,
yes,
then?
Well, I think it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. I'm trying to play a little bit more aggressively this season. And when he got the, you know, the monster haul against Wolves, when he assisted the three goals for Madueke, I kind of went, okay, well, they've got, you know, I think they had Palace at home and then Bournemouth and a decent-looking fixtures. So I kind of went there and thought, right, let's go after it aggressively. And captained him in game week three, missed, therefore, the Haaland hat-trick that he scored and didn't captain Haaland, captain Palmer instead. So I do feel like that's been a bit of a mistake. But yeah, thinking about moving him on on the basis that performance was not good at the weekend. And yeah, we're not kind of sure where to go to at Chelsea, if we should at all, because it's looking still a little bit disjointed, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd feel more worried about selling Cole Palmer than I would about Son. That's the only thing with that. I still think Palmer could prop up any time, but yeah, it's a stressful hold, I think, just given those attacking options. And yeah, what we're really not seeing from Chelsea. Sanchez was excellent though. I think he's an option as well at 4.5. You know, a couple of great saves, obviously saved the penalty too. So yeah, another option in goal potentially, but yeah, I'd be staying away from them.
Okay. And then from a Southampton versus Manchester United perspective, the early kickoff on Saturday, Amad Diallo was the one that stood out for me here. Only 5 million in FPL. Really impressed me, actually. He created 6 chances in that game. So, I don't know, is Erik ten Hag starting to turn a bit of a corner at Man U, or are we just saying Southampton, again, obviously could have been different if they'd scored the penalty, right? Good save from Onana. But was it Southampton poor in this game and we should be continuing to target them in FPL, or have Man United starting to get their act together a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're still the team to target for me. Then that's three, like it, that's six. It? Yeah, 3 goals they've conceded in the last 2 matches. There's 6 goals in total. They started really well, but that seems to be a bit of a theme with them, that they have these kind of quite good spells and then concede, and then it kind of all just goes to pot, or they don't take a good chance, or they miss a penalty, something like that. And then they allow the other team to kind of grow into the game. Diallo's keeping Garnacho out of the side, which I'm really surprised at, but he's obviously started the season really strongly. I thought Rashford looked better, a lot better. His shot maybe could have been dealt with a little bit better by Ramsdale.
Yeah, I think so.
But generally speaking, had a couple of shots and looked a bit livelier. The player I was most impressed with was Xerxes. He was the biggest underachiever.
Very good.
Yeah, biggest underachiever when it came to XG, 1.14. But yeah, really lively in that game. A couple of really good shots, kind of buzzing around. If he can add a few goals to his game, I wonder if he could be an option for us.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. He's looked, even in that, I remember the first game week one, when he came on and got the winner against Fulham, didn't he? And he looked as if he wanted, he looked full of energy, full of passion, full of enthusiasm for the game. And I like to see that. I like to see that. He's not taking his time to get used to the Premier League. And he looks up for it. He looks physical as well. So, yeah, don't mind him at all. Could be an option. Yeah, absolutely could be an option. Where else do we need to go? Let's just quickly discuss a couple of forwards that might be now question marks for a few managers. I want to talk about Muniz at Fulham. And I want to talk about Isak from Newcastle as well. Let's finish up by talking about those guys.
And Pedro as well. That's the three games. That's the three games left. We can talk about the three missing or injured forwards.
Well, let's talk about those three then, in from a forward perspective then. So Isak with the eye injury, which is what we think he's got, is what Eddie Howe said he's got, and we've got to keep an eye on whether that's a serious one or not. Muniz doesn't get the start, and only one goal from his last 35 shots in the box was a stat that I was researching just coming onto this pod. One goal from 35 shots. And then, of course, he brings Raul Jimenez in, gets the goal straight away. It's like, not good for Muniz owners. And then João Pedro, yes, a little bit of a knock. Obviously went away with Brazil. Fair play to him. Gets the call up to the international side. But there's three forwards there that we all have a little bit of a question mark over now. How do you feel about them?
Yeah, Muniz is the most worrying one, I think. I don't know if you agree, but in terms of...
I do.
The others are knocks and little injuries, but I'd be amazed if Pedro didn't come straight back into the Brighton side. I thought we really, as a Brighton fan, we really missed him in that game. Isak is like the only striker they've got, so, and he's brilliant. So obviously he's coming straight back in when he's fit. Muniz though, why would they bring him back in? Like you say, he's missed loads of chances. Yeah. Jimenez has come in and scored straight away. They've got other options that can play. So I think if you've got Muniz, he would be priority sell for me this week. Whereas the other two are definite holds. Do you feel the same?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I feel like Smith Rowe, who chipped in again this weekend. I saw him coming off your bench. That was a jammy one.
Just a bit.
Smith Rowe coming in with the seven. He looks, he's chipping in, isn't he? He looks kind of, I'm not going to say talismanic yet for Fulham, but certainly everything seems to be going through him. But I do want to give a shout out to Adama Traore as well. Only 5 million in the game. Statistically, he is the most threatening Fulham attacker. 11 shots, 3 big chances, and 20 penalty area touches so far this season. So, maybe going a little bit under the radar, Adama Traore, but for sure, no.
Can't be going back there.
He's not having that. No, he's not having it. What do you like about Adama Traore? Come on, there's some
I love him. I think he's brilliant. I love literally everything about the man. He's absolutely fantastic, but he is not a proven FPL asset, and I think that game proved it.
5 million ads. He's only 5 million. You just need him to play well.
I just think that game proved what he's about. He's so threatening. He's bursting through. He's out muscling everyone, but he just cannot get that final. I'm slamming my keyboard down in frustration with him. I can't imagine, watching him as a manager must be one thing, but as an FPL manager, it's another thing. He's so frustrating. 5 million is a good price, but no, not for me.
All right. Well, I can't tempt you with Adama Traore. Tell me what might tempt you then going into game week 5. Quick thoughts on transfers and captaincy for next week.
I've got to be honest, Lee, it's a boring one for me. I think I'm rolling this week. I've got no Arsenal in my team currently. I'm obviously going to want some in game week 6 for those two promoted teams back to back. If I don't roll, I'm probably locking myself into a wild card in 6. So I think if I roll, I might be able to get away, even if it's a -4. To bring in some Arsenal and not have to wildcard. If I was going to make a transfer, I would probably be getting rid of Robinson this week, I know he's obviously started the season really strongly, really high ownership. His price has gone up to 4.7. But Newcastle, Forest, Man City, Villa, next 4 games.
Looking tricky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looking tricky. And, there's some decent options. You grab Lewis Dunk, you could grab Leif Davis, I was really impressed with, against Brighton as well.
Yes, yeah.
Ipswich defensively look decent. Or Vandenberg could come in next week after Spurs. So yeah, it would be a defensive move, but I'm probably not going to do anything. How about yourself?
The opposite. I'm thinking about doing a double change. Having only played the wild card a couple of weeks ago, I'm thinking of a double change. So unimpressed was I by Cole Palmer, and so impressed was I by Ollie Watkins that I've got currently Cole Palmer and a non-playing 4.5 in my side. And I've got a bit of money in the bank, and I can swap Palmer and the non-playing 4.5 for Mbeumo and Watkins right now. which I do kind of like, given that Mbeumo's fixtures do look really, really good. The Visser thing is giving me pause for thought a little bit, but I just like the sound of both of those. The way that, you know, everything we've discussed about Parma, and listen, you've got West Ham away, Brighton and then Forest at home. They're reasonable fixtures, right? That could absolutely come back to haunt me, no doubt about it, getting Parma out. But it would give me a more-rounded squad as well. I mean, I wouldn't have to rely on the likes of Robinson at the back quite so much. As you say, the fixtures look difficult for him going forward. Maybe wouldn't have to rely quite so much on Morgan Rogers, who we haven't discussed yet on today's pod. But no panic on Morgan Rogers. The underlying stats still look pretty good. He's still getting in decent areas, but he's not really bringing home the points. So it would mean a bit more of a rounded squad for me. Wouldn't have to necessarily rely on some of the more squad players like Robinson and Rogers. Mm. I just like it. I'm just feeling it. Watkins and Mbeumo for Palmer and, well, at the moment it's Wee Joe, who currently isn't even in the league as a 4.5 forward. So, yeah, maybe those two. And then I think for captaincy, I think if I had Mo, I think I'd be going for Mo. I think if I had him, I'd go there. But with those two moves, I'm likely to go again without Mo Salah into game week 5. And if I do, then it'll either be Haaland because Haaland, or if I bring Watkins in, maybe it's Watkins, you know. Maybe it's Ollie Watkins captain.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the advice is, and you know, we say this a lot on this podcast, but I think particularly this week with the Champions League starting, with the League Cup as well, the next round of that, you've got Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Villa, all in Champions League action. Brentford, Everton, Southampton, Fulham, Palace, Man United, Brighton, Wolves, Spurs, all in the League Cup. Everyone basically playing. Save those transfers, be patient, wait till the end of the week, and then go from there.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And while you're waiting for those matches to conclude, don't forget to join Jules, Kelly and Sam on this week's FPL pod. They'll be looking ahead to game week 5.
And if you haven't joined the FPL pod mini league, the code is Q7YCO0.
Bye guys. Thanks, Az.
See you later, Lee. Bye.